This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Books Blow, Jack Kirby, The Epic Life of the King of Comics. You know I can't be found sitting home all alone. If you can't come around, at least please tell the phone. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. Baby, if I made you mad for something I might have said, please don't forget my... Hello, welcome to iFanboy Booksplode. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And this is the Booksplode show, unlocked by the patrons over at patreon.com/ifanboy, our bi-monthly show in which we take a look at a collected edition, the kind of comic we can't talk about on our regular weekly show, our regular pick of the week.
Just don't talk about it. Whatever you do, don't talk about it.
This month, we're going to be talking about Jack Kirby, The Epic Life of the King of Comics by Tom Scioli, published by 10 Speed Press, came out last summer. And we've had our eye on it for a while. Josh, you bought it last summer. You bought it for me for Christmas, but I've had my eye on it.
Yeah, I bought it sight unseen, basically. I had no idea what it was, and I think I just got some Amazon recommendation. And I thought, oh, it's a comic book about Jack Kirby. And, I know Tom Scioli. I mean, I don't know him, but I know his work. And, yeah. And that's a guy who, you know, his work looks a hell of a lot like Kirby's, depending on how he decides to do it. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. But to be honest with you, given the cover, the style of art that... It's actually not terribly indicative of what's inside, I must say. But given the cover, I was a little worried.
So, spoiler warning for The Life of Jack Kirby. So, this is a unauthorized biography. It tells you that right off the bat. There's a page in the beginning. And they tell you that because the way Tom Scioli did it was in first person. So, it's like Jack is narrating his life story. And he used many, many, many interviews as his sources. A lot of it's direct quotes. But then he just wanted to make it clear that this was not an autobiography, not told to him by Jack Kirby, who died a long time ago. Let's talk about the cover real quick before we get into it.
Sure.
I think it was a disservice to the book. So the cover is very, it's not chibi because it's too human-like, but it's very big eye, anime style Kirby. And that is Kirby they use in the book, but it doesn't really... I was surprised when I opened it to see the art style based on the cover, like you said. I think it was a disservice.
Yeah, it just doesn't match. And, you know, I'm a Kirby diehard, so I'm going to read this. But I thought, and I know that it turned you off. I was like, you're like, I don't know about that thing. Mm-hmm. And so, but regardless, I mean, you know, getting past that one bit on the cover, you know, everything after that was delightful.
Although the image, the entirety of the image is actually really terrific of him.
Yes.
At the drawing table, and then sort of coming out of his brain is the Kirby dots as inspiration.
Yeah.
That frames the cover treatment and the title treatment. As an image reflecting Kirby himself, it's a terrific image. It's just the
style. Right. And I think that the thing is because the drawing's not even bad. Mm-mm. It's not a bad drawing. I don't mean that. But it is produced in such a way where it's actually very vibrant and it mm-hmm. looks like it's going to be like Kirby Action Comics. And yep. and as you sort of get inside it, the whole thing is done with this sort of faux aged sepia tone sort of, you know, production. Brown, yellow. Yeah. yeah. As if you were looking at a comic book that's been around for 50 years.
I think that was part of it too, was that the cover gives you this pop art sensibility. Between yes, the drawing exactly. style and the color being really bright and vibrant and Kirby dots, and then you open it up and it's not all that. So that's all the only sort of disconnect. I was like, well, that's an interesting choice to make, totally different than what's inside. But that's.
But at the same time, I don't know how many books you could probably sell based on sort of the color palette that goes on inside the book. It's very yeah. brownish, beige-ish, so whatever.
So this is not going to be some of our other reviews. You know, we sort of go through the story and, you know, because there's like a, you know, a plot and you know, story beats, and it's, you know, a lot of the, you know, the fiction works, it's, you know, there's beginning, middle, end. This is a biography, so, you know, I'm not going to go step by step through Jack's life, and more, I think more talk about it just in general terms. I loved the first person narration. I thought it really created a sense of connection to Jack and made the story sadder when it was sad, you know, like it really brought you into him. To not have it be, you know, at arm's length, to have everything him talking
yeah,
to him directly.
I read two or three books on Jack, and I read a couple of books on Joe Simon, mm-hmm. and I've read, you know, we've read the history of Marvel Comics and things like that. And so I am not unfamiliar
right.
with this
sure.
stuff, you know, and nor are you. But the format of this being that, and I recognized a lot of this. I was like, oh, this is actually his words.
Yeah.
Meaning, you know, they were all, it's pretty scrupulously, you know, put together. It's almost like a reality show. You know, they went and they take all the little clips and they put them in order,
sure.
you know, and tell the story out of and illustrate it. But, you know,
there's a pretty hefty appendix where he, you know, yeah. sources the, you know, a lot of the quotes, not all of them, but a lot of them. And
although, you know, like you could pretty easily, like his bibliography is not so big. Like you could read through all that. I've read through about half of it and sort of be an expert on it. But, you know, the elegance that he sort of, Tom Scioli did, like putting it together in a very, very passable and smooth and comprehensive narrative through the whole thing. And again, in his voice, before we even get to the illustrations, was fantastic. I was just more impressed by it the more I went through
it. Oh, as a piece of art, it's terrific. Yeah. I mean, as a piece of reporting or writing.
Yes.
It's really, he does a terrific job of condensing and coalescing and setting up themes throughout Jack's life and how the, you know, things set up early and they pay off later and the through lines. He does a really great job of taking someone's life. It was very difficult to distill. It's not a short book. It's pretty hefty. 200 pages with the appendixes and everything to a single piece and made it clear and thoughtful. And by the end of it, you felt like you knew all the main players. It was an incredible piece of work. I mean, Tom Scioli is, incredible comic creator, and I'm glad he's doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I was basically just kind of like delighted the whole way through it. I again, based on that cover, I wasn't really sure what to expect. I was expecting, I think, you know, one of those, and then he went and did this,
right.
and he did this, and you know, and I thought, oh, that'll be kind of fun or whatever. And it was a whole other kind of experience.
Oh, totally. You're really inside of his head. It really gives you, I mean, an intimate look, like I keep saying, it's a real intimate look at his thought processes and his fears and his angers and his resentments and his successes.
And to be fair, you know, if you've sort of looked into a lot of this stuff, he gave a lot of interviews, particularly towards the end of his life and career, that were pretty bitter. You know, he has one take on things.
I mean, yeah, this is Jack Kirby's take on his
things. Yeah, yeah. And so it is important to not fully trust the narrator in that sense. But either way, there are certain facts that are inalienable. There are, you know, the way that he felt about it is real. I mean, to me, like, this really, he's got one of the books listed here is Tales to Astonish by Ronan mm-hmm. Rowe, which is my favorite of the books. I think it's out of print.
Yeah, I read that one.
Criminally. And I think that one really gets into the psychology of the man mm-hmm. and, like, his fatal flaws. And I think that they're in here, but I think it's actually a fuller picture of him in terms of being a rounded person and his delight at his work that he did. You know, I came out of that other book. I knew a lot, but it always felt kind of sad. He did all these things and felt like he didn't get the recognition for it and pushed himself constantly.
There's a bit of that here. I mean, I gave this to somebody else to read, and the report I got back was, I knew Jack Kirby got screwed. I didn't realize how badly he got screwed. I think it's pretty clear in here how.
Yeah, no, yeah. I don't mean so much that he. I think that's all agreed upon, fine. But, like, I thought that this illustrated how much he really loved to create.
He loved making comics. He loved creating new comics and new characters. He loved all that stuff. He loved it.
And again, like, we know this stuff, you know, but there are bits in here. It was like, he created the Green Arrow's backstory? like he would. He would take these little side jobs in the 50s and 60s, and then it's stuff that we are very familiar with today.
Right.
I mean, over and over, I actually lost track of the number of things. Like, he did that? And, you know, then you go and, you know, see Stan Lee to talk about how, you know, I generally believe Jack's side of things, that he really did the bulk of the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
I tend to believe that Stan did packaging. You know, and added some polish after the fact. But, you know, the bulk of the sort of idea generation and the stuff, you know, like, I think he's responsible for much more than half of it, I think. And, you know, the idea that there's a comic book writer and a comic book artist, that was not equitable. That was not done in this. I mean, think about it. It wasn't just Stan. It drove away Steve Ditko entirely from everything. You know, other people kind of put up with it, but it was so much a Jackson. The other context of it is just, I love the idea, but it's, you know, it's who he is. It's where he grew up. It's his sort of attitude that made him just go, well, I guess I got to keep working. You know, it's this great tragedy. It's his, you know, like he's just like a Marvel Comics character that he created in a way. Like, you can just see like amazing power and talent and then a fatal flaw.
One of the things you really get out of reading this book is that he's like a once in a generation mind. You know, just the sheer tonnage of things he created. And look, not everything was amazing. There's some bad ideas in here that he came up with. And there's a couple of things that Stan made better. And there was one part where he got really mad about a name change. And the name that Stan changed it to was much better than the one he came up with. But even if you take half of this as truth, he's still a once-in-a-generation creative mind. Every single thing that people are watching at home on Disney Plus is because of this one middle-aged guy from the Lower East Side who was in his 40s and 50s when he created all these superheroes, which flies in the face of everything we're told. You know, normally it's like you need the fire of youth and all that stuff, but this guy with gray temples and a pipe was the one who created out the entire Marvel Universe, basically. Yeah. I know, Green Arrow when he wasn't busy, and then the new guys, you know,
the losers and Challenger of the Unknown and stuff for Superman that we don't even, you know, all the stuff that we sort of take for granted now is just, oh, that's part of lore. And then you start seeing how many lines connect back, you know, to this guy. And also you get to meet all these other people who are names that you know and whose work you know, but you see how they're connected to him and that, like, he had a big hand in making sure Ditko was around and Steranko and Wally Wood. And, you know, he was working with Wally Wood when he was like, all right, that's it. I'm done with this.
Neil Adams.
Yeah, exactly. The other side of that being that he created his fair share of like schlock at the same time.
Totally. Yeah.
We needed to superhero book. So we did Captain Flagman, you know, like, you know, man had work to do.
But I think also that's the sign of a creative mind that can't stop either. Like, doesn't mean every idea is going to be gold, but there's just going to be a lot of them. And a lot of them are derivatives. That's what they did back then in comics, was they just did derivatives of what was popular. Even Captain America wasn't Captain America a derivative of another character?
Sort of, yeah. I can't remember what the name is, but yeah.
Archie character.
It was much better. Yes. They got sued.
I think that as a piece of work, like, I loved the storytelling. I love the art. The likenesses are terrific of all the comic creators based on, you know, photographs you've seen. I mean, they really don't worry about getting sued because there's no worry about the trademark in any of his books. All the characters
are.
I did want to ask you what you thought about the portrayal of Kirby visually. We talked about the cover, but there's clearly a reason, and I'm curious to think what you I have an idea, but I'm curious if you have an idea, because there's one part towards the end where he looks in the mirror and realizes he's gotten old, where he sees a reflection in the mirror that's actual drawing of Kirby, not the cartoon drawing of Kirby. He's drawn like every other character in the book is, in a realistic style. Mm-hmm. So clearly there's a reason for drawing him in this way, as this childlike big-eyed character who has gray sideburns but looks young. And I want to know if you have an idea of why you think Scully did that.
And the sort of lines around his face get more heavy, like under his eyes as it goes through. You know, I've thought a lot about it, and I don't know that I have a great answer, you know, other than to say, like, he stands out in the middle of everybody as being this other type of person
mm-hmm.
who is a cartoon, but perhaps not in the way that we think of the word cartoon. Like, he just is more vibrant and, you know, like, interesting look, he's not the word, but, you know, like, he's this other kind of life form in the middle of all these other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's sort of like he is the cartoon and imagination that he's creating. I don't know.
I think that's I think I wondered if it was about him being like sort of this, not childlike, but this sort of eternally young mind, that his body was portrayed that way. Like, he's always sort of he looks like the young version of himself. The only thing that changes is the hair, and eventually towards the end he gets a couple of wrinkles, but for the most part he's a sort of vibrant character portrayed that way. That was my thought. I don't know. There's unless we ask Tom Scioli, I don't really know that there's an answer.
And I think that that's probably pretty valid. That sort of childlike mind and imagination never seems like his approach to the work never seems to change. And even as he got too old and infirm to actually draw, his attitude towards the work and towards the creation and his imagination never seems to falter. Like, he never tires of it. But so by making him sort of that ageless cartoon, it sets him as a person and not like a thing that ages. He, you know, he is Kirby, you know, just like his cartoons don't age. Maybe he doesn't either.
On a similar note, there's just some terrific cartooning in here. I'm looking at the page that you put on your Instagram of the moment Stan Lee becomes Stan Lee, where he goes from male pattern baldness guy in a shirt and tie, clean shaven, and the next day he's beatnik Stan Lee with the hairpiece and glasses and beard. And I just laughed so hard at that panel because it's just, he's looking at the toupee and he's like, Stanley? Hey, Jackie, baby. And I just...
And he always calls him Stanley. Like, yeah. Not Stanley. It's always Stanley. But that's a thing that happened.
Yeah, but just the cartoon, though, the look on Stanley's face, the smile, you can already see he looks sort of like he's not even paying attention anymore. You know, he's already got the persona.
Like, out of everything I've ever read about...
I'm not knocking Stanley either.
No, but after everything I've read about him, this is like one of those, it's a completely different take on the man.
But the thing is, like, what I'm not knocking is, and we talked about this when he died, is that, okay, even if he didn't contribute anything materially to these characters, without Stan, there isn't the industry we have today because of the promotion he put into it. Like, they're all part of it. So, like, I'm not going to knock him, even if he took all the credit they didn't deserve. I really do think that you don't have the industry you have today if not for his public-facing evangelism of the comics industry. Because Jack wasn't going to be that face. He was a grumpy old 50-year-old guy from the Lower East Side. He wasn't going to be the guy in talk shows making guests laugh and making it okay to read comics. And it wasn't anybody else who was going to do that. It had to be Stan Lee.
No, absolutely. But I just think that the story, because it's from Jack's point of view, mm-hmm. it's a very different story than we get about the man.
Sure.
You know, literally Stan the man. And so, like, you're seeing this guy who's known him since he was a kid, and literally that page you're talking about where he shows up and he's got the Joker suit, basically.
Yeah.
You know, purple and green.
Yeah.
You know, the page before is what he looked like.
Yeah.
You know, like a balding middle-aged sort of tall skinny guy. And I don't think people realize that Stanley's exceedingly tall and thin.
Very tall.
He's kind of odd.
At least 6 feet tall.
He was a big guy. You know, imposing and kind of heroic looking, but not until he started wearing that toupee and had the beard and whatever. You know, he just kind of looked like a schlubby office dude before that. It's fascinating. I'm just flipping through this, and there's all these things that you can be like, oh, he did this. Oh, he did that. Joe Simon did the first issue of Captain Marvel and then had to testify because they got sued that it was copying Spider-Man. Jack created
Superman.
Jack created that cartoon where the kid turns into a car. With the creepy, you know, morphing animation.
Yeah.
He, you know, basically created romance comics as an aside one week. You know, it's on and on and on and on. And when he starts talking about he does the New Gods and goes through this whole thing and nobody gets it, you know, for a little while. And then he's like, fine, I'll make the Eternals. And he does it again, you know, but not copying himself, but just like, fine, I'll do this thing, you know, and he cares so much about his work. You know, like he gets pissed off, like when people are copying his style, you know, he likes that he's influenced people, but you know, when they changed his faces at DC when he was doing Superman, that pissed him off,
right.
You know, and there's so much in here, and it's, you cannot overestimate how much of a connecting through line this is in all of mainstream comics today.
Yeah.
You know, and it kind of feels like ancient history, but it's not. And the book just really puts it together in such an easily digestible way. If you've ever thought, man, I got to read one of those books, like, and you haven't, or what, like, get, this is a great place to start.
Yeah. The thing is, like, to participate in a hobby like this, you don't have to know the history. You don't have to. You don't have to read all the books. You don't have to. There's no reason. You can just enjoy the work. But if you are interested, and a lot of comic fans are more interested in the history of the in medium than I think other subcultures, other than like super film people, it's worth reading these things because they didn't happen that long ago. So, you know, at the time we talked a lot about the Marvel, The Untold Story, that book that came out a while ago, you know, years ago. And there's the Jack Kirby books. But this is a great visual look, and comics are so visual. You get to, you really get a, I think it's, it, you even get a, I think even a better sense of reading a prose book about what he's done when you see it all laid out for you, you know, in color. Mm-hmm. Like, these are the characters.
No,
these are, this is the work. And Scioli does a great job of recreating the style, you know, of the art and Kirby's style and other art styles that you see throughout the book. This is a really, really lays it out for you. So if you're someone who's, you know, a comic reader and, You know Jack Kirby and Stan Lee and the whole Marvel 60s revolutionary, but you don't really know it. This is a really great book for that. There's tons of great prose books you can read. We can recommend them. They're terrific, but I really love this book. I think this is terrific. And again, from a visual standpoint, you can't beat it because it really does make it clear.
Yeah. And again, Scioli, boy, he really found exactly the right tone for what the cartooning and coloring and sort of layout needed to look like. It's not even just the, you know, the basic, it's like Golden Age style panel layout. It's, you know, and lettering.
Oh, sure.
Sort of all of that stuff is indicative of really what Jack did before 1962.
Those word blooms that go the entire length of the panel. No matter how much word is. So here's a what if for you. Here's a scenario. What if when he collapses in the forest in World War II, Jack does not make it?
Can you even imagine?
What does the world look like? I mean, not even the comics industry, not even this show. What does the pop culture world in 2021 look like if Jack Kirby does not come home from the war?
It's not even
close. It's a totally different world.
It is
unrecognizable.
I would go so far, and I've said this to people, it would be as if there was no Elvis and possibly no Beatles.
Right.
I mean, that really is what we're talking about. And it maybe didn't seem like that until about 10, 15 years ago. But if we see what has happened to sort of pop culture and films and it's just everything, and it's not even like about the things that he directly did, but you think about all the things that are ripped off the things that he directly did and sprang off and how stories are told. And I mean, it's not even.
And the thing is, we're not saying there's no comics because there are, you know, there's still Superman and Batman and the whole DC canon, and Cap was before the war, so you still have Captain America and Submariner and those characters, but you really, it kind of stops there. There might not be anything after that, anything new, at least on the Marvel side.
Stan doesn't do that stuff without Jack.
No, and the ideas that are given to him before he puts his Jack polish on are totally different. Yeah. And then you don't get the industry that was sort of revitalized by Marvel's 60s boom. You don't get comics now. You probably don't have comic shops. I mean, we're probably not even talking here. We're talking about something else.
Yeah, and you know, and Stan might not become Stan with somebody else.
Right. The moment he collapses in the snow there and he doesn't die and he wakes up in a hospital and the war is over, it's a total, that's where everything changes.
I mean, it's even so, if he didn't go to war, everything is a little bit different too. It's all sorts of things like that. But, you know, can we also, let's not gloss over the fact that Stan or Jack had a, he had a heck of an experience in the war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of these guys went.
A lot of combat.
You know, at that time, you know, a lot of comic guys went. A lot of combat. Oh, yeah, combat, right. You know, but, you know, Stan ended up in the Media Corps doing training films. Joe Simon ended up, he joined the Coast Guard, and he rode a horse on the beach in Long Island looking for submarines.
That was awesome.
Jack was in Bastogne.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he met Patton. Didn't like him. You know, he
anyone watched Band of Brothers knows how bad Bastogne was.
Yeah.
And how it haunted everyone who was there for the rest of their lives.
I mean, it's kind of amazing that he, given what he's got, what he went through, he did pretty well coming out of it mentally, you know? And I think the book does, you know, anybody, and also, you know, the story of Jack is not Jack unless it's also the story of Roz Kirby, his wife, and their really wonderful lifelong relationship. And I think that she is adequately depicted and treated here because she's a huge part of that story where she was, you know, his protector to a certain extent.
She was certainly the protector of his reputation.
Yeah.
And, you know, wanting him to get the credit he deserved and never fought for himself, or at least was never successfully fighting for. You know, he did ask for things and they just told him no. And he went, okay. Which is, you know, a lot of people are like that. A lot of creative people are not good at business. You know, there's a long, long history of creative people getting taken advantage of. He got paid for his work. He certainly wasn't poor. They had a house. They had a nice house. They had a good life.
Yes, that's true. And he did a good job. You know, it's certainly later on, people started to appreciate. And it's not really, actually, it's not really in here so much, but, you know, the bit where he left comics to work in animation because
that was great.
Comics was breaking his heart, kid. You know, and it's really, you know, it's interesting to me that, like, here's this guy and he ends up basically being a workaday guy, you know, but everybody there knows him.
I revered him because he was Jack Kirby. They were all comic nerds working in animation.
But he treated like everything else. He had, you know what? He didn't seem to have too much of an ego in this sense of, like, I'm better. I mean, he knew he was probably better than everybody and he, you know, appreciated his own work and his part or whatever. But, you know,
I think he had an ego, but it was not an overt one. I think it was something that where in his head he was going, I'm better than everybody at this table. Why am I not doing that? But he's not someone who's going to be like Stan Lee. Who's going to strut around and.
Yeah. But he's just seemed genuinely. And again, these are his words, but, you know, he just seemed sort of genuinely flattered every time. Like, he'd be like, this person said nice things about me. Right. You know, oh, this person. Like, it's almost like he was surprised about them.
Sure. I think that's also part of the upbringing and the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I flew through this book.
Yeah.
It's not dense. This isn't a early 2000s, you know, decompressed book. There's a lot of panels and a lot of words. But it's such a great story and so expertly told, and the art is absolutely gorgeous. I just think it's so fascinating that time, you know, that the unfettered creativity they had to come up with because they had to survive making these comics. So, you know, it was not a prestigious job. No. They were making them out of like hotel rooms, him and Joe Simon. but they had to put so much. There was one point where he describes how much output he did. And it's just sort of laughable now considering what the output of comic artists are. And it's not like his pages weren't detailed. They were crazy detailed. They were so detailed. The inkers were erasing parts of them.
And he wasn't working with a script. You know, he was just going from whole cloth. Yeah, I remember at one point in the 70s, I think, this is when he went to D.C., this isn't in this book, but his contract was 15 pages a week.
Something like that's in here. Because like I did like 4 books a month for them or something like that.
Yeah, but that's like not even just, you know, he didn't ink them, but he basically, at D.C., he wrote them. Like, he's like, I want to do the whole thing. So he, you know, a book a week, basically.
Right.
Full stop. That's amazing. And his art and creations stood the test of time longer than anybody else's. And that's not even an exaggeration.
No. Last year, we talked about his New Gods book. And that sort of crosses over here, where he's talking about the making of it. And we talked about how his art changed by the end of that book. And he talked about here, he talks about how his art changed and how he couldn't draw like he used to. And eventually has to stop drawing. And eventually his inkers are taking on a lot bigger role. And I couldn't remember. Because I know we talked about the inkers, and I know there was one we didn't like, and I couldn't remember which one that was.
It's Coletta's at the beginning, and then Royer comes on at the end. And DC did not want Royer, but, you know, Stan liked him and thought he did a good job. But I remember when we read that, the difference from Coletta to Royer was noticeable, and the Royer stuff was better.
There was a couple of guys. There was one guy we just didn't like. Because there's one guy he, like, fires.
Yes.
And Royer was his assistant, I think.
But I think this is in this. That's the area when he finally stops working with Coletta because he finds out that he's been changing a line.
Well, yeah, he found out that he was erasing. That, yeah. You know, Coletta has his defenders. Mm-hmm. It's hard to defend that.
I mean, yeah, I'm guessing he didn't think he was doing anything wrong at the time.
Right.
You know what other story always gets me? Always is the piles of his original art just in the hallway that people just take as souvenirs at Marvel. And I just, oh.
Yeah.
It's not even like that it's worth a shit ton of money, because it is and it should be. It's just like, those are like Rembrandts. I mean, those.
He only got 88 like, pages back after he made the deal with Marvel to get all his original art back. He only got 88 pages back. Of the thousands and thousands of pages he did for Marvel.
That breaks my heart.
Yeah.
And breaks my heart, like, not for just for him, but like for his kids. You know? And I think it was funny because I think I saw somewhere, like, somebody interviewed recently and was talking about his son, Neil. It was like, Neil's 72. And I was like, oh, right.
Yeah.
Because I just think, you know, oh, that's his kids. And I was like, oh, no, they're very old men, too. But at the same time, like, none of this feels that long ago.
Kirby died at 76 in 1994. So that was a long time ago.
Yeah, but it's still like not that far back. You know, I remember the first time I went to San Diego Comic-Con in 2000, like Will Eisner was on the floor. You know, these guys were still around. You and I.
No, the Golden Age guys. We interviewed Jerry Robinson and Joe Kubert.
Yeah, all those, like, exactly. It's not a long process. Like
those guys who made it in their 90s were all around Comic-Con not that long ago. It's funny. You can just almost open any random page and find something really interesting that happens on it. Because it's just chock full of it. Jim Shooter. I like how they portrayed Jim Shooter as like twice the size of Jack Kirby. Like I said, they. She always more than one person. It's just wonderful. I got to say it again. If you're at all interested in this, man, you got to get this book. That's a great comic book history. And it's a great companion to other stories. What you got to do is you got to, like anything, you got to take everyone's point of view together. And the truth will be somewhere in the middle. Somewhere... Yeah. Might be closer to someone else's point of view, but most likely this is not 100% accurate, but it doesn't really matter.
Nobody's memory is.
Yeah, it's a great story.
Mm-hmm. So go get it. It's a must buy. I mean, like, that's, unless you have no inkling or care about process, if you love the Marvel Universe, really, or superhero comics in general, like, you should be reading this.
It's great.
Just make all that stuff better.
Yeah. I mean, this was an easy 5-star book. I was happy you got it for me. Happy to have read it. And I just want to say lastly, before we wrap up, that there's a couple of really emotional moments. One is when he has the heart attack, and then when he dies. And I thought they were so well portrayed. The action stops for a silent panel, and the heart attack, he's, you know, sort of curled up and holding his chest, and it's all red, like a red light bulb has gone off. And then when he dies, he's just dancing with Roz, and the next panel, it's a black panel. And it was just like, ugh. It was a very stark and simple and elegant way of portraying someone dying. Like, we didn't see like a death scene. It was just, he's there one moment and he's gone the next.
Mm. And then the next bit is just sort of these flashes all the way through his life. This 2-page spread done in 12 panel grids.
Yeah.
Some quotes from real people. That's got an image of his gravestone. It's got a still frame from the end of that Superman Animated Adventures. You know, and we see as we get going, you see Stan being kind of a dick.
Yep.
Then you see the movie stuff start, and you get all these images, you know, from the stuff that he made. It stretches endlessly.
Yeah.
And then it ends that with Jack Kirby's heirs have no claim to the copyrights. It's just like, oh, God. And then it keeps going, you know, more stuff. Like, enough stuff that I haven't even seen all of these shows because there were so many of them.
Right.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
It ends sadly, but it's also a tribute to his work. And also, I would like to say that, you know, a couple of years ago at a college here in Los Angeles, they did a whole Kirby exhibition. There's a part in here where his art is on display at a museum, and he would have been really gratified that he was, you know, given that kind of exhibition. It was the entire museum. It was all his original art and original comics on display, and it was beautiful, and he really was treated in that exhibition like the true artist he was.
I saw there was an exhibit at the Jewish Museum in New York years ago, mid-2000s, I'm going to say, that I went to. And I think that might have been the part, that might have been my turning point in terms of Jack stuff, where I kind of understood the context and really got it, you know, because I saw that.
Seeing the original art is something else. I mean,
yeah,
the inking back then wasn't like the inking now that really sort of I want to say, well, there's no inking now anyway, but the inking of the later times, which was about preserving every bit of the artist's intention. Back then it was like, get this book out quickly. And that meant like, most of the lines didn't get inked. And so when you see a Jack original page next to the finished art, and the finished art looks great, but when you see that original art, then you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
This guy was doing 15 of these a week? Mm-hmm. I mean, geez.
Also want to point out, by the way, it's the book itself, the actual production, it's a really nice book. Like, it's really
great. Oh, yeah, it's a great book.
It feels like it's uncoated paper, but it's maybe got coating on it. It's just, it's all got this really nice, it's just a great feeling book. It's a beautiful production from 10-Speed Press.
Yeah, it's a great book. It's beautiful. The production is top-notch.
I can't imagine that there's not Eisners in this book's future.
God, I hope so.
It'd be insane.
We're almost always wrong when we say that. Jack Kirby, The Epic Life of the King of Comics by Tom Scioli, 10-Speed Press. It's a pricey hardcover. It's not cheap, but it's...
29 bucks.
It's worth every penny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
5 stars.
Easy. Give it 6. Not allowed to. It's fine.
We can give it a 6-star. Just one extra one for Jack. So there you go. That's our Booksplode for this month. As I said at the top of the show, the patrons over at patreon.com/ifanboy unlocked this show and its sister show, the Talksplode show. So you'll be getting another Booksplode in 2 months. And who knows what we'll be talking about, but I'm excited. This was a fun one, and I'm glad we did it. Thank you to the patrons for unlocking the show. Thank you to Josh for getting me this for Christmas. If you want to talk about show or this book or anything else, ifanboy.com is where you can find this show. You can find our weekly Pick of the Week show. Josh and I talk about the week's new comics. Josh does the Talksplode show, the companion piece of this show. We have our Mediasplode show. By the way, all those shows go back to Kirby. The names of those shows.
Yeah.
The Splode, that's the joke from the Kirby dots exploding out of Black Bolt's mouth. You can trace those names back to Jack. So there you go. Everything goes back to Jack. And until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Don't let comics break your heart, kids.
Don't stop the hanging of me. Don't make me feel this way. Come on over here and love me. You know what I want you to say. Don't be cruel to who a heart is true. Why should we be apart? I really love you, baby. Cross my heart.